You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome to the Best of 2015 Good Job Brain Awards. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage your MC for tonight, Karen.
Welcome, spiffy, speculative, springy, sprightly speedsters. You're listening to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 171, and I am your MC, Karen, for tonight's star-studded and fact-filled evening, as we are all here at the Best of 2015 Good Job Brain Awards.
Start searching for clues. I'm learning today. It's been a year of weird facts on Good Job Brain. I want to dive in to a wiki and never sleep. Then find I'm acing your quiz on vexillology. These trivia blues are melting away. Oh no, wait, that's just the death ray building previously mentioned. On Good Job Brain. And when we learn more next year, we'll have some more from us to you on Good Job Brain.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage co-host Dana.
Pop quiz hotshot. Yes. Are the silver platters real or fake X-Men villains? We sure didn't know the answer, but we had a great time guessing. Here are the best Good Job Brain quizzes of the year.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, I have a possibly hip quiz for you guys. It's been a while since I've inflicted some sports trivia on you guys, so I will. I promise to try and go easy here. I have sports slang quiz. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a word or phrase that is hopefully very common known slang for the sport, and I will give you the sport, and you tell me what it means.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
These are pretty colorful. I like it. Some of these are very weird.
Some of these are weird, and where possible, I will try and give you a little bit of etymology. It will not surprise you to learn that a lot of these sports slang terms have disputed origins.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Here we go. First one. So get your buzzers ready. Buzz in if you think you know it. And remember, I'm giving you two pieces of information, slang and sport. You tell me what it means.
Okay.
In bowling, what is a turkey? I think everyone clicked in on that one.
Three strikes
in a row.
It is.
Yeah.
Three strikes in a row.
Did you guys see my tweet?
I didn't.
Did you guys see my Good Job Brain tweet?
I found out
all the different names for the different consecutive strikes.
The double turkey.
Yes, there's
the,
many different ones.
Yeah.
Yes, the four bagger, the five. Yes, there's many different names. The turkey is one of the more well-known and easier to accomplish.
Turkey's pretty standardized.
There are, believe me, I tried. I could not find any citations for the actual origin of this, but a very commonly told story is that once upon a time, it was common either for a particular bowling alley or for bowling alleys in general
to award
a turkey during the holiday season to the first person on a team, maybe that day, who could get three consecutive strikes.
That's cool.
Who knows?
Get people in the door.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly sure. Is the best. Yeah, and to be fair, it did used to be a lot harder to hit three strikes in a row than it is.
Yeah,
the
right.
The bowling alley was all.
Yeah.
I mean, the balls were oblong.
The pins were set by hand. They weren't going to be.
They were pelicans, right?
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. In football. American style football. What is a Hail Mary? Chris.
That is when you basically, when you're like, you know, 80 yards, you know, to the goal and there's 10 seconds left on the clock and you don't have any timeouts and it's just like, okay, run super fast towards the goal and I'll just lob the ball towards you and there's a 1 out of 100 chance you're going to catch it, but whatever.
Exactly
it's
right.
It's basically like
saying
a prayer to Mary, Mother of God, and maybe she is rooting for your football team and she will intervene and guide the ball to the hand of the receiver.
That's right. That's right.
So it's just you're really far from the goal, and someone's just going to throw the ball, and someone's just going to run.
Yep. You say a little prayer and hope.
You're really far from the goal. You're down so much, time's running out that even if it's intercepted, it doesn't matter because you're going to lose anyway. Like slam dunk or home run. This is one that's kind of moved out. You know, it's we're down to our Hail Mary play.
Right.
This is interesting for the real sports fans among you. You might be interested to learn.
Who's that? Yeah.
I found out that this only dates back to 1972. This term. And it's credited to Roger Staubach, who is a famous Dallas Cowboys quarterback. But he is credited with coming up with the word. Yeah, in an interview.
He was our Hail Mary. Oh, yeah.
The interviewer for Sporting News says, I asked if he really saw the receiver or if he was throwing it away. He said, let's just call it my Hail Mary play.
Yeah. Wow. There we go. Wow, it's always nice when you can pinpoint it right on the dot.
So satisfying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
In the sport of hockey, what is the five hole? The five hole. And I can give you a hint if you want. Chris,
what's it? Is it the penalty box?
No. Karen?
What is a five hole?
The five hole.
The five
hole. Or a five hole.
Is it the hole in the middle where you do the kickoff?
The face-off. The five hole, I'll give you a hint.
There's five areas.
There are five face-off circles, you're right. It's related to the five goalie. Hole. The five hole is related to the goalie position.
Karen. The face.
No, not the face, but you're thinking in the right direction.
The butt.
The five hole.
Yeah, go on.
The five hole is the spot between the legs.
Oh my God, that's what I thought it was without any clues.
The
hole,
the spots are
like,
numbered.
No.
The spots are so if you're a goalie in front of the net, you've got glove side high, glove side low, stick side high, stick side low, and those are 1, 2, 3, 4. And then there's the five hole, which is right between the legs.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh my God, that's a word we need to say.
Five hole is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
I loved him in an American Tale.
Five hole. In the sport of basketball, what is a brick? What's a brick?
I
believe this when you throw the basketball and it just like bounces off the backboard and just rebounds and does not go into.
I will accept that. Yeah. Notably, it's a bad shot that's not an air ball.
It's a thing.
A brick has to. Yeah.
It made contact with something.
That's so poetic. Air ball and brick.
Yeah. And
airball.
Yeah.
And I think the connotation's pretty clear. It's like you're throwing up bricks. They're not very pretty to look at.
Yeah.
The worse a shot is, the more likely it's going to be called a brick. Mm-hmm. All right. We've had this one a pub quiz before. This one's shown up in the sport of baseball. In the sport of baseball. What is Uncle Charlie?
Oh.
Karen.
That is a curveball.
Yes. You are correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Uncle. Begins with C as well, not knuckleball.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a C and an R in there. Charlie, Curve.
Who is Uncle Charlie? Is that named after prison?
I think it's taking, I'm spacing on the name of it, but it's Charlie as in military code for C.
This one's a little unclear as to where the Charlie and Uncle Charlie comes from. Some people say military, some people say CB radio code. It's kind of lost to the mists of baseball, but Uncle Charlie is code for the curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Last one, and I'm not going to give you a sport here. What is a hat trick? And what sport might you use it in? Chris and or Karen?
Hockey.
Uh-huh.
And it's it's when you score three goals. Is it when one player scores three goals in a single game, or is it when one team scores three goals in a row without the other team scoring?
A hat trick is one player scoring three goals in a game.
Okay. It's three.
Right. Okay. It doesn't need to be consecutive. Doesn't need to be unanswered. Yep. Right.
But this slang, but this slang evolves into three of anything, kind of. Almost.
Yes,
it does.
Like,
it
much
does.
Like you know, Hail Mary and Grand Slam and et cetera. It's evolved
it's
out of sports into
right.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's a menu item at Denny's.
You hear you'll hear it mostly in.
I order the Hail Mary all the time at Denny's personally.
You'll hear it mostly in hockey, also in soccer. You can have a hat trick in soccer, three goals. And there are a lot of stories about where this one originated in hockey leagues.
It's a peggle as well.
NHL teams, going back to like around the mid-century, they're competing stories, but they all sort of revolve around the same theme of a local businessman team sponsor basically offered a reward of a free hat. A nice free hat to any player who could score.
All of these things always sound like things people needed an explanation for, so they made up the most obvious explanation. Like, why is it called a turkey? Because they give you a free turkey. Why is it called a hat trick? Because they give you a free hat.
Yes.
Why is it called Hail Mary? Because they gave it a free Bible day. They gave it a free Bible.
The fans of Montreal claim it came from Montreal. Toronto fans claim it came from Toronto.
Of course.
All of them are wrong.
Oh, yeah?
It didn't come from hockey. It didn't come from soccer. A hat trick goes back to late 1800s from cricket. It is a cricket term.
What a sticky wicket.
And
Commonwealth friends.
And this has been verified. There are a lot of citations. It really did mean, originally, in cricket, a bowler who takes three wickets in three successive balls.
Okay.
After which, he would be presented by his club or the fans or the boosters with a new hat. It really was. And keep in mind, once upon a time, men wore a lot more hats than they do now.
And hats were very expensive.
And hats were not cheap. And a nice, you know, bespoke hat could be a big deal. So yeah, cricket. We get it from cricket all the way into hockey and soccer with a hat trick. You'd be rewarded with a hat.
I want to see what kind of hat. If it's like a top hat or like a...
Well, if it was a bowler hat for the bowler.
Oh, indeed. It might have been.
No, I looked it up.
Wait, what was it like?
I looked up the bowler hat to see if there's any sport connotations.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, you're right. So anyway, hat trick now, any kind of three of anything in a game, sort of loosely a hat trick. But yeah, the traditional hat trick is three goals.
Cricket.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right, well, you guys know more sports slang than maybe you thought.
Five bagger in the five
hole.
Four bagger in the five hole.
I mean, it sounds like what it is.
Well, there are a lot of golf terms, right? Like golf. Albatross.
Birdie, albatross, eagle. Yeah.
Condor.
Condor.
That is a thing.
Yeah.
The honey guide.
Yeah.
You just go around randomly dropping your ball into other people's holes. That's the honey guide.
Yeah.
Oh, mark myself down for a honey guide on that one. Time to hit the bar.
Yeah.
18 holes, I'm done.
I won.
Yeah, it took me
18 holes, 18 seconds. Time to drink.
All right.
So every company has a founder or founders, people who establish a company that may go on to do great things.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those people, when looking for a name for their company, may look only as far as themselves and will name their company after themselves.
Okay.
And so this is a quiz about companies that are named for the founders of that company.
Okay.
There is an overarching there is another thematic thing going on. There is another theme that is beyond the boundaries of the theme that I have just suggested, which is the right.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That's so
a meta theme.
There's a meta theme. There's another theme. Okay. So as we're going through, try to there's a pattern. It's a pattern.
Okay.
Sure.
Yes.
Buzzing in.
We are buzzing in. This restaurant was opened in Lodi, California in 1919 by Roy Allen and Frank Wright. Colin.
That's A&W.
That is A&W. Yes, Roy Allen and Frank Wright.
A. Allen Wright.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
California Ice Cream Shops, Burton's Ice Cream, and Snowbird Ice Cream merged in 1953 to form a new ice cream place named after the two founders.
Is it Baskin Robbins?
It is Baskin Robbins.
Oh.
Burt Baskin and Irv Robbins
merged their shops.
Maybe. Maybe you don't. Maybe you do. This guy named his company after himself, and he founded that company after he initially purchased the magazine publisher Vogue. Karen.
Condé Nast?
Condé Nast!
Yes!
Okay.
Yes.
From whom all my paychecks are derived. Yes, Condé Nast. That is a guy. His name was Condé Nast.
Really?
Yeah.
First name Condé?
Condé. First name Condé, last name Nast.
Nast.
Yep. At the end of the movie Hannibal, the title character is seen eating foie gras, purchased at this upscale, very upscale chain of grocery stores, which was initially opened in New York City. Karen.
I've never watched the movie.
Yes.
Dean and DeLuca.
It is Dean and DeLuca. Yes.
Upscale.
There were additional hints in there. Yeah. Right.
Well done.
Crafted in such a way that, yes. The founder's name is often dropped when this camera company is mentioned, but it's really in there, or it's supposed to be in there. Colin.
Is it Eastman Kodak?
Eastman Kodak is still to this day the actual proper name of the company. Yes.
Is it two guys?
No, just the guy's name is Eastman. He made up the word Kodak.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Is the theme you thought was the theme not the theme?
Not the theme.
The nickname.
Check me, Chris.
I guess I did. The nickname of this car company's founder was Il Commendatore. Colin.
Il Commendatore. Okay, he's Italian. Ferrari?
Yes.
Okay.
Enzo Ferrari was known as Il Commendatore. This company was named for its founders, Gary Burrell and Min Kao. Gary Burrell and Karen.
KB Toys?
Nope.
Oh, that's a good one, though!
Gary Burrell, GaryBurrell, and Min Kao, MIN space KAO. Yeah, KB Toys would be good.
Not Reebok.
They use their first names.
Oh.
And they made a nice little portmanteau of them.
Garmin?
Garmin.
Whoa! Gary the GPS manufacturer.
That's right, yep. This company, this founder-named company, which Ken Jennings knows very well, is rather unique in that most of its employees work only 4 months out of the year. Oh, geez. Karen.
H&R Block.
H&R Block.
That's the question that Ken Jennings
went out on.
Yeah.
Yes, that ended his Jeopardy streak. This retail store was founded by a guy named Ingvar Kamprad. Everybody.
IKEA.
Yes, is a acronym of Ingvar Kamprad and the family farm where he was born, Elmtarvid, and a nearby village, Agunarid.
Yes.
Sounds accurate.
Yes, yeah.
Very Swedish.
IKEA. Finally, and sticking with names I can't pronounce, James Liaoutaud, L-I-A-U-T-A-U-D, Liaoutaud? James Liaoutaud founded this fast-growing sandwich shop in 1983. Yes, remember?
Jimmy John's?
Jimmy John's, yes. That's James. He doesn't go by James. He goes by Jimmy John.
Oh, that's a sandwich place.
It's a sandwich place.
Yeah. Yeah, they're growing fast.
They are growing fast. So, just as a recap, that's A&W, Baskin-Robbins, Condé Nast, Dean & DeLuca, Eastman Kodak, Ferrari, Garmin, H&R Block, IKEA, and Jimmy John's.
Yes. They're in alphabetical order.
They're in alphabetical order. Okay.
Well done. Well done.
Thanks.
Wow, the Garmin one blew me away.
That's a good one.
I really like that one. When I saw that one, I was like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And I think,
not a lot of first names.
That's elegant.
Yeah.
Not a lot of first names, yeah.
I will close us out with a quiz called, Where's the Original? This is
where'd you put it?
This is going to be a quiz about place names. We have a lot of cities, countries, states, places in the world with new in front of them. This is a question for you about where's the original, where's the old. So if I were to say, I know you know the city of New York, but where is original York? And I would accept. I'll accept that. Right.
Oh,
exactly.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's right.
Well, you know, I mean, be more specific if you can. Mainly, I'll accept it because it's right.
Oh, okay. You don't want us to say planet Earth for everyone.
Yeah. Right.
The solar system.
The northern hemisphere.
Right.
I narrowed it down for you.
Mm.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Buzz in when you're ready.
Okay.
I know you know the city of New Orleans, but where is original Orleans? Was it all together?
France!
It is France. Yes,
Orleans.
That's right. Orleans, right. Orleans. And it's sort of indirect. It's named after the Duke of Orleans.
Oh, so it's
who takes his name from, the region in France. I know you know the country New Zealand.
Yeah.
But where is original Zealand?
They don't know.
Is it Belgium?
It is not
Brussels.
Belgium.
Brussels is a city.
Wait, that is...
Think about who were some of the early... Yeah, Karen.
Netherlands? No.
Yes.
Oh, Netherlands.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, genius.
Yeah, that's totally right.
Yeah, so Abel Tasman, you know, after whom Tasmania was named. He was Dutch. He was sort of the first European to sight New Zealand. He gave it a name originally that was later changed to New Zealand after the Dutch province of Zeeland. So this is our New Zealand.
Hmm.
I know you know the Canadian province of New Brunswick, but where is original Brunswick?
Ooh. New Jersey. I know there's a Brunswick in New Jersey.
Yeah.
New Brunswick.
And this one's not a trick, but it's a little tricky. Chris.
Germany.
It is Germany.
Wow. Yeah, Brunswick, you know, it just sounded...
Brunswick.
Brunswick. Yeah.
I'll give you, you're right for the wrong reason.
Okay, great. I'll take it.
It's named after Braunschweig, which you may have heard of. The city of Braunschweig, which was anglicized into Brunswick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I always thought it was it just sounds so true. English. Wow. Well,
Brunhilde.
You got it.
Brunhilde.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Quick quiz. Last question. Here we go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, that is
well, you know, it, so I
a
started.
A lot of these are England.
Yes. I know you know New Mexico, but where's original Mexico?
That could have been your sample.
Is it Mexico?
Well, what about Jersey?
Oh, sorry. I have two more. I know you know the state of New Hampshire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where is original Hampshire?
Hampshire?
Chris?
England.
It is England.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hampshire County.
Yeah. Shire.
I don't want us to. Yeah.
Hampshire.
Yes.
Hampshire. All right. And last one. I know you know the state of New Jersey.
Oh.
Here we go.
But where is original Jersey?
It's like, it must have changed its name.
Jersey.
England.
Poland?
No, not Poland. This is not a trick, but tricky.
Amsterdam?
Jersey.
Netherlands?
France?
Belgium.
Jersey.
Like, J is a weird...
Wait, has nobody said it yet? Karen,
No one said it yet.
I'm just...
Jersey. Sure.
France.
I think when I say
you'll
remember.
Oh.
Chris, take a guess.
Egypt.
No. It is the colony, the New Jersey colony, was named after the Isle of Jersey, which is in the Channel Islands and is an independent region.
Whoa!
Yes. Huh. It is a bailiwick of Jersey. This is one of my favorite terms, the bailiwick. It's connected historically with the UK. Like, they're sort of on the hook to defend Jersey, you know, militarily.
Jersey.
But they are autonomous. They rule themselves.
No
yes. The Isle of Jersey in the Channel Islands, off the coast of Normandy, France.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The English Channel. Got
yeah,
it.
Yep. Yep. I had always assumed it was just, again, like everything else in New England, somewhere in England proper, but
in
no.
New England!
No, no. Jersey's Jersey's, they call it a crown dependency. So, like, Isle of Man Isle of Man.
Yeah.
Guernsey, also a crown dependency. So, it's sort of in this weird quasi.
But Guernsey's over there.
Those are different. Yeah. Those are more closely tied to the UK.
Are they in the. What about Newfoundland? Foundland.
So, a lot of.
So, isn't that, like, literally, like.
New
we just found this?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Newfoundland.
Oh,
my God.
Newfoundland.
There's no Newfoundland.
No, it's a land that we was newly found.
That's so cool.
I mean, I made that
New
up,
house
but
town.
I'm guessing that's true.
Newhouse town.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, maybe related to that, looking at a lot of the eastern cities, like New Haven, there's no Old Haven. It was just, a New Haven where they were founding, right. All right, well done, well done.
Oh, my God, Newfoundland.
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 One of the first comic books I ever remember getting was an issue of Spider-Man, the debut appearance of Hydro-Man. Hydro-Man, and for some reason,
to water conservation. Yes.
He can turn himself into water, okay. Basically.
Oh,
and he ended up being a fairly long-lasting villain in Spider-Man.
That seems like that's a good power.
That was pretty good.
I mean,
he can freeze.
Right, you can imagine all the ways that
vapor.
You know the
you
good guys
it,
have thought
you can
to
bust
beat him.
Out a lock by like you know filling
expanding.
It with water and
yeah.
expanding it.
It's pretty
or
powerful.
You
it
can
is pretty powerful.
Trap a, you know somebody. Right. Yeah. You can slow down. I want to keep. Brainstorming this. Yeah. You could.
But how would you defeat him? A sponge? A fan?
Oh,
no,
a fan.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been turned into vapor before. Yeah. Just that's one way to beat him.
Yep.
If you happen to chance upon Hydro Man.
You could drink him.
You can mix some poison into the water.
Well, actually, you guys know Sandman. I think they've even had Sandman in the Spider-Man movies,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
At one point in the Spider-Man continuity, Hydro Man and Sandman got merged together into Mudman.
Oh,
Mudman.
Yes. How many was this a special like 6-issue sort of mini series?
It was a short run.
Intimate.
Yeah, well, you know,
what?
He was dumb
that
too.
Is,
it wasn't like he was like twice as smart. It was almost
he was half
like
as smart.
They, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of that to say, I've had a fascination with the villains in
yes,
particular.
Yeah.
Sure. And Karen, okay. I know you and I have talked a lot about
Batman villains,
the good villains, the bad villains, the dumb villains. I'm a Marvel guy, so I put together a quiz about Marvel comics villains.
Okay.
For this quiz, I will give you a description of a villain and their name. You tell me, is it a real villain from the Marvel comics, or is this a villain that I have made up to try and fool you?
So not like from another...
Right.
Like not from DC or...
Right.
I feel like we're all going to learn something.
Oh, man.
In this quiz.
I've tried to choose some of the more obscure ones, but some of these have shown up more than once over the years. And the order of these has been entirely randomized, not by me, so you can't try and outsmart me.
Okay.
He wouldn't put two of these back to back.
Wow.
Okay. The dice decided the order of this quiz. So here we go.
Oh. Yeah, but whose dice were they?
It was on the iPhone.
Oh,
yeah,
well.
It technically it was a dice app.
Yeah,
that's how sad. That's how sad things are today.
We couldn't even find real dice.
It was app. Yeah. All right, here we go. So, why don't you guys do me a thumbs up for yes, this is a real villain from Marvel Comics, or a thumbs down, Colin, you are just BSing us.
Okay.
Stilt Man. Stilt Man is a scientist and inventor who developed a pair of super long telescoping legs, allowing him to rob tall buildings.
If you made it up, you did a great job.
It captures that time.
Yeah.
Like
it's like Inspector Gadget-y.
Yeah.
All three of you say real. Uh-huh. You are all correct.
Okay.
This is a real villain. He first fought Daredevil in 1965.
See? Yeah.
It's simpler time, as you said.
Yeah.
Yep.
Moving right along.
It's dumb enough to be true.
The Silver Platters. Spoiled rich kids Arthur and Eva Silver turn to a life of crime using metal throwing discs as their weapon of choice.
I'm gonna say
it's real. I hope you made it up.
I know. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Everyone says real. No, this is false. I made this up. I made up the silver platters.
That is gold.
Yeah.
I mean, silver.
The silver
gold.
Platters. The right level.
Yeah.
Of,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one would suspect them because they're rich.
Right. Why do they need to
they're bored.
Throw metal discs
around? They're so rich.
Paste Pot Pete. Peter Petrusky is a chemist who develops an advanced adhesive and turns to a life of crime using his super sticky paste to combat foes.
Oh, my God. Again. I hope you made it up.
Yeah. Wait, what's his name again?
Paste Pot Pete.
Peter Puchovsky.
So this sounds...
they love alliteration.
Yeah. They love alliteration. It sounds old-timey as it is, insofar as it refers to an obsolete piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it also sounds like the sort of thing that a comic artist would like, on deadline, literally just starts looking around his office like Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects, lands on the paste pot and is just like, bing, bang, boom. I got this one. Yeah. So I'm going to say true.
I like it too much. I'm going to say true to all of these.
All right, well, Chris is all in on true.
Yes.
Dana says true.
You know, yeah. I really like the fact that he has, like, a Russian-y last name, too.
Yeah.
The Colossus, you know, had a...
Makes it East Coast-y in a way. Yeah.
Okay, true.
You're going to say true?
It's too good.
All right. Yeah, you are all correct.
Oh,
yeah.
He is a
real villain. And Chris, I love the deduction that you go through. Yeah, yeah. And he really did. He had a little paste pot and a gun, and he would just spray. I mean, it was simpler. He was a very early Marvel villain. This was 1963.
I wonder how long he was around.
He showed up a lot. He fought...
As
a legit villain. He fought the Fantastic Four many times.
Okay.
Hell's Bells, and now that's B-E-L-L-E-S, Hell's Bells, an all-female team of high-end burglars who dress in demonic costumes to hide their identities and intimidate their victims.
Wow, very progressive.
Mm.
There's also like a band, I think, called the Hell's Bells. It's all girl, AC/DC? Girl band.
Really?
Yeah.
Kiss had their comic. Kiss was big. Maybe this was jumping on that train. I feel like just the Kiss thing.
All right. Karen and Dana say true. Chris says false. I made this one up. I made up the Hell's Bells. All right, next one. The Splinter.
Is he a rat?
A former lumberjack who discovers a mystical hardwood so strong it can puncture steel and turns to a life of crime.
If I were him, why would I name myself the Splinter? I would mean something like the Trunk or something more mightier.
Right,
like
macho. Right.
The Splinter is like this annoying little thing.
Roots McGillicuddy.
I would say it's true. But I feel like if Colin made it up, it would have been
had
like
a better
the Lumberjack
name.
Or Timber or something. You know?
Yeah. Oh,
Timber.
Timber.
That would have been good.
So that's why I think it's real, because it's not as good.
All right. Chris says fake. Karen and Dana say real. I made it up.
God, it's reverse psychology.
I know. It's both a compliment and an insult. Paste Pot Pete.
Hole Punch Harry is on the loose again. Punching holes in your money.
Render it illegal tender. Sir, we found these little circular people.
His calling card.
Yeah.
This can only be one person.
And it's just confetti.
Hole Punch Harry.
All right, so I don't know if you guys saw, but Big Hero 6, the fantastic new Disney movie, just came out on DVD.
It won an Oscar!
Won the Oscar for Best Animated Film. So anyway, I was thinking about Disney, and I was like, oh, I'll do a Disney quiz for all quiz. And then I was like, wait a gosh darn minute, I know Dana's not going to be there, and that means it's going to be just Karen answers all the questions. And Colin's just like, I'll just leave? Yeah. So then I realized, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I've crafted a sports quiz that Colin can definitely get all the answers to, and I've crafted a Disney quiz that Karen can definitely get all the answers to, but I'm going to give you the sports quiz, and I'm going to give Colin the Disney quiz.
I love it.
And we're going to see how you guys do with this.
I love it.
Colin will be sitting there sort of biting his lip during the entire time. I know this! But we're going to see. This is, again, these are very generally easy questions for somebody who knows their stuff about this, which means it's going to be a challenge for somebody who totally doesn't. So we'll begin with Karen.
Okay.
And I'll give you a round of sport. Five questions for each of you. All right, here we go. Now quiz Karen in the realm of sporting. This NBA legend played his entire career for the Boston Celtics and was named MVP for the years 1984, 1985, and 1986. Karen.
Oh, yeah, it's just me.
I think she's going to get this.
Who is Larry Bird?
Absolutely. Who is Larry Bird? Yes. All right. Starting
I only up. Know that because my dad used to have a t-shirt of Larry Bird's face, like over print. Like the whole t-shirt is his face with his mouth open. And so my dad would like take a nap and I would come into the room and be like, whoa, what is that? It's Larry Bird's face.
It's a great Slumdog Millionaire moment.
Yeah.
Question number two. This is golfer Jack Nicklaus's nickname.
I know who he is.
Yes, yes. This is his nickname.
I know he's very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it like...
Golfy McGolferson?
like Shooter McGavin. Golf that's guy.
Shooter McGavin.
The pro.
No. That's a nice guess,
I like
though.
That. That's a classy guess.
Colin, you want to go for it?
I believe Jack Nicklaus is the Golden Bear.
He is the Golden Bear.
Oh, I was going to say the Golden Boy.
Oh, man. Oh, you should have
been amazing. Don't they have the jackets? The gold jackets? Or is that just from Happy Gilmore?
Green jackets for the Masters. Oh, okay. But yes. Yeah. Right, right.
Okay. Why is he a Golden Bear?
Who knows?
I'm not sure the origin of that nickname, actually.
Me either. And I didn't do enough research to find that out. So question number three. From 1996 to 2007, this baseball team was managed by Joe Torre.
From
1996 to 2007, this baseball team was managed by Joe Torre. It's T-O-R-R-E.
Oh, Torre. Ah.
Which is a weird way of spelling Joe, but there you have it.
East Coast. Boston Red Sox?
So close.
New York?
New York Yankees.
Ah, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
I like how you were able to intuit East Coast just from the manager's name.
Just from the way I was speaking?
Because I figured 2007, that was... Didn't the Red Sox, like, have a win or something? It was a big deal.
They did have a win, and it was a big deal, yes.
And so that's why I thought it was the timing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Got it.
Karen... Question number four.
Wow.
Karen's round of sport. Name any two of the seven Canadian NHL teams.
Oh, this is easy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, she'll get that.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
What's easy and what's not.
Well, there is, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
I believe Vancouver Canucks.
There you go.
And also the Montreal Habs or Habitants or Canadien.
Canadien.
Ottawa Senators.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing pretty good. Colin, do you want to try to finish it off?
So we go with Senators, Maple Leafs.
Senators, Maple Leafs, Canadiens, Canucks. Three left.
Is like Edmonton,
Oilers.
Edmonton Oilers, yeah. Two more.
Calgary Flames.
Calgary Flames, and one more.
Yeah, what's, like, you have to think of major cities.
The Winnipeg Jets.
Wow.
All right, between the two of you. All right, and question number five. At age 29 in 1973, she beat 55-year-old Bobby Riggs in a Battle of the Sexes tennis match. Karen.
Who is Billie Jean King?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good. So let's see. Now, you've acquitted yourself well in the sports round.
Yeah.
Three out of five.
Three out of five. Very good. Let's see Colin tackle these Disney-themed questions.
I'm not feeling confident.
I don't know. We'll find out. Yeah.
We've talked a lot about Disney. Maybe
it's true.
Osmosis.
I've absorbed a lot of information passively.
Yep. Question number one. This Disney film features characters such as Toulouse, Marie, Duchess, and Roquefort.
Okay. Toulouse, Marie, Duchess, Roquefort. It's all French.
Uh-huh.
So is that Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, it is not. Well, you don't get to buzz it, but you can go for it if you want to.
What is the Aristocats?
The Aristocats.
Which takes place, you're kind of close. It does take place in France.
Okay. It does take place in France.
You know Marie, though. Marie's the white cat with the little purple bow tie.
Okay.
That's where she's from.
Yeah, right. Got it.
Sorry, I tried to pick characters that did not overtly suggest that this character is a cat.
Yeah. Well, are there other cat names?
Thomas O'Malley, the alley cat.
Thomas O'Malley.
Scat Cat. I guess I could have, yes. Name any two Disney musicals that feature song lyrics written by Howard Ashman.
Okay, so I'm assuming that's like the later gen, right? So I think he started with Little Mermaid, is that one? So I'll say Little Mermaid, and I'll say Beauty and the Beast.
You are absolutely correct. In fact, you nailed the two that he actually wrote all of the lyrics to. He also contributed a song to Oliver and Company, and then wrote three of the songs in Aladdin.
Okay.
Name the sequel to Fantasia.
Oh, man. Oh, is it... It wasn't Fantasia 2000?
Yes, it was Fantasia 2000.
I almost overthought that one.
Yes.
I'm like, it's not Fantasia Barrino.
Yep.
It's not, yeah.
Fantasia 2 Electric Boogaloo. Yeah. Fantasia Barrino. The sequel. I like it. We may need to know this one day. This is not a question, but for a bonus point for both of you.
Oh.
In what year was Fantasia 2000 released?
Well, okay. Well, it's got to be early because late would be stupid. I'll say 1998.
99.
It was released in 1999. It's okay. Like, just remember, it's like Madden.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. In addition to its most popular Academy Award winning song, this movie also features the tunes How Do You Do and Everybody's Got a Laughing Place.
Oh, man. Okay, so I'll just keep it to Academy Award winning. I believe Aladdin won something for an Academy Award for music. I'll guess Aladdin.
It is not Aladdin.
Okay.
What? Wow, you haven't been to Disneyland.
You can hear both of these songs being sung on a certain ride at Disneyland.
I got nothing.
Okay.
I believe that was Song of the South.
Song of the South.
Oh.
The Academy Award winning song being, Colin, want to take a stab at it?
Zippity-doo-dah.
Zippity-doo-dah.
All right.
All right. How are you
My
doing,
last
Ashley,
chance
by the way?
I think
you nailed Ashman and Fantasia, so you can tie this up. Here we go. All right. Here it is. There's the big old softball right across the plate just for you. The titular characters of this film are named Todd and Copper.
And Copper. Okay, so now I'm drawing a blank on anything that has title characters. Todd and Copper.
Or,
right, okay, they must be some kind of animal. Are they, like, cousins or, Newsies? Is it Newsies?
I wish it was Newsies.
I had to
yeah, but Karen will school you on
that.
I know, it's right, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
The Fox and the Hound.
The Fox and the Hound.
Oh, wow.
The Fox and the Hound.
Oh, man. One of the saddest movies
ever. Wow. I've never seen that as a
voice
kid.
Voice by?
I've never seen that one. Oh, I don't remember.
Who was what?
Kurt Russell.
What? Really?
Yeah. And, the other person's famous, too. It was like an old actor. I think it was like Mickey Rooney or something.
I'm a hound dog.
Oh, so cute.
Oh, man. I haven't thought about that one. I should see that one again. Well, Karen, you're better at sports than I am at Disney. So there we go.
Woo!
That was good. I like that.
Oh,
man, yeah. It's so funny because they're all so easy for me.
Yeah.
And yet my questions are so easy for you. But
yeah, I like when Chris was reading the Joe Torre question, like you're writing down the years and I'm like, oh, I don't need to know
the years.
I don't need to know what years.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh,
that's
all
great.
Right.
All right. This is why we're a team.
Yeah. This is why we're a team.
This is why we are hated throughout the entire food truck park.
Pissed and booed at our own pub trivia.
People do parody.
I feel like they're smiling when they do that.
I don't know.
Yeah, we had parody teams making fun of us.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, co-host Colin.
People throw the word music around a lot these days, and I find that more often than not, they are in fact using it correctly. Let me introduce to you the 2015 winners for Best Music.
I'm bringing back, and I did this once before, international song covers.
Oh, I love these.
Famous songs.
Originally sung in the English language.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
now in another language.
Now in another language.
So
and maybe different arrangement.
What are we trying to guess?
So two things.
Oh.
I'm going to make it trickier. Two things. One is, can you name the original artist perform that song?
Okay.
Or the song is fine too. These are all famous songs that you two all know.
Yeah.
Should know.
Okay, all right. Should all know.
The other part is, can you tell me what language it is?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Sounds good?
No.
You're so sassy today. First one to whet your appetite.
Marie douceur a beaucoup, beaucoup de passion, c'est. Oui, mais un jour tu verras entrer dans la danse.
Everybody!
Rolling Stones, Painted Black. French?
That was my first guess at first, but the longer it played, the less I thought it was
French.
It's
like I don't understand the words, but it sort of sounded like a French
accent. It started off sounding French, but by the end, I don't know.
Esperanto.
It is French.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Painted Black by the Rolling Stones by Marie Laforet. Next one. Chris,
was this the Coors?
Incorrect.
Oh,
I believe it was the Cranberries.
Oh, the Cranberries.
And was that it wasn't song for my father? What was it called?
Oh, that's dude. Yeah. Oh, to my family.
Oh yeah,
this is a dream.
Dreams. And what language was
that? Was that Swedish?
Oh, I was gonna say maybe Spanish. But again, the longer it went on, I didn't sound. I don't know.
That was in Cantonese. Oh. Chinese Cantonese.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Nowhere close.
Nope. Not at all.
Guesses of not Swedish or Spanish.
Right.
Okay.
But yes, that was a Cranberries. Dream.
Wow.
Next one, we're moving up in difficulty. Here we go.
E deixei escapar as mãos, se o futuro assim permitir. Não pretendo viver em vão, meu amor, não estamos sós. Tem um mundo a esperar por nós, o infinito do céu azul. Pode ter vida em Marte, então vem cá, me dá a sua língua. Então vem, quero abraçar você.
Going around the world.
Oh, what is that?
Well, I'm going to say, is it in Portuguese?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
Portuguese.
In Portuguese.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But
Life on Mars.
Oh, I do not know that.
David Bowie.
Oh, no. Oh, okay.
Yes, yes. This was just
slow.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. Say Jorge. Say George. Say Jorge. If you watched Steve Zissou in The Life Aquatic by Wes Anderson,
yes.
He is one of the crew members,
yes.
And he sings. I think the soundtrack was all him,
yes,
singing David Bowie covers
that's
in
right.
Portuguese.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
With a guitar.
Really good.
Here's another one. Listen carefully. Listen to the beat.
Okay.
The arrangement is a little bit different, but the beat is the same. Colin.
That's a cover of the Gorillaz, I believe.
Correct. Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, yes. Man, again, these languages.
How does that
song? I'm happy.
Oh.
When I'm sad.
Oh.
I'm sunshine in my head.
Right.
I'm useless.
Yeah, mostly correct there. Yeah, I think you got a word or two wrong. Yeah.
Somebody.
Get
me out of
here. Right,
my cage.
Huh. And Dell, right.
Huh. So it was a little bit slower version.
It did sound like it beat-wise, though, yeah. But all of this to dance around the fact that I have no good guess on the language there. I'm going to guess again, I don't know, Eastern European something? I don't know.
In terms of, well, it's not.
Geographically.
Yeah, geographically.
I'm not picking it up. It's tough.
It is Lebanese Arabic.
Okay.
Oh. Huh.
This group is fantastic. And this song, this arrangement, he later raps too. It's really cool.
All one guy.
I really like it. No, it's like a band.
Oh, okay.
In terms
of
the vocalist.
That's cool. I like that one as well. These are all good.
One last one.
All
and
right.
This is kind of a jokey one. It was in a movie, so maybe it's not commercially released.
Okay.
And the person who's singing is not a famous singer.
All right.
He's an actor.
All right.
So please give me the original artist of the song that's being covered and perhaps the language.
Yo mismo te asustaré y mi sombrero me pondré tempranito llegaré. Si me dices que me amas.
Chris.
The song is I Want You to Want Me.
Yes.
Oh.
Is it, is that,
sounds
Chet? No.
Cheap Trick.
Cheap Trick.
Oh.
Cheap Trick.
Oh, okay. The, well, I Want You to Want Me. Okay.
Yeah.
To
want me.
Yeah. In Spanish?
Sounds Spanish.
Spanish,
okay.
Yes.
Right.
It's from,
wow.
The person singing was, Gail Bernal Garcia.
Oh, Gail Garcia Bernal.
Yes. The one of the famous Mexican actors. He was in a movie and he like had a cheesy like music video in the movie. It's a really crazy fake video.
Cool.
Well, good job, you guys. There
hey.
Was a trip around the world.
I feel like we got either the language or the song for all
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Keeping the theme of epic, I have put together a quiz of epic guitar solos.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Epic
That's
guitar
okay.
solos.
Yep. Okay.
These are all solos from famous songs.
Yep.
I know you've heard the song, or I'm reasonably sure mm-hmm. you have, but
all
do
right.
you recognize it from just the solo?
Oh, wow.
So, we write
yeah,
it right
yeah let's do this as another write down.
Yeah.
So I will play you about
We're so nerdy. We're like, we love writing down tests.
Yeah, ask 30... me some questions. I'll write down the answers.
It feels more real.
Can we write it down?
Name the band or artist, and for a bonus point, name the guitarist. I'll even throw in
Whoa.
Bonus possible points
okay.
here. Some
All
of
right.
these, some of these are famous bands with famous guitarists. Here we go. First one. All right, answers up. Write down something if you're not sure. Karen says Rolling Stones, which is correct, and Keith Richards, also correct.
Yeah.
Chris has question mark. Dana says Rolling Stones and Johnny Depp's pirate dad.
Yes,
I will accept that.
Oh, yeah.
I will accept Johnny Depp's pirate dad.
I like that. Yeah,
that's what I don't know
I
that. What
Keith
song?
Richards.
That is Sympathy for the Devil.
Pleased to meet you.
Hope you guess my name. All right, next one. All right, here we go. Next track. Please tell me the band. Remember, these are legendary, epic. Answers up. Ooh, nothing for Chris.
What? I do.
Dana,
it's not the right answer.
Dana says Leonard Skinner, not correct. Karen, with 2 points again, Stairway to Heaven, Led Zeppelin guitarist is Jimmy Page.
Jimmy
okay. Page.
No,
okay. Jimmy
I
Page.
Meant Led Zeppelin. I don't yeah. I don't deserve the point, but that, I was like, it's not that. It's different words. It begins with the L. Yeah.
All right. Okay, showing me how hard it is for me to gauge how hard these are here. All right, next one. All right, and answers up. Chris says The Eagles with a bonus of Don Henley. Dana says The Eagles with a bonus of Don Henley. Karen says The Eagles and nothing bonus. You guys all got 1 point. It is The Eagles, Hotel California. No, that is Don Felder and Joe Walsh.
Oh.
That
didn't
have been trivia, but we didn't know the answer then either.
Is Don Henley even in the band?
Yes, yes, but he was not the guitarist.
Right.
Yeah.
A whole lot of Dons. Too many Dons. All right, last one here, guys. Last one. Let's close it out here in style. Please tell me the band. And if you're feeling especially smart, tell me the guitarist.
Answers up. Karen says Leonard Skinner. Chris says question mark. Dana says Leonard Skinner. Yes, that is Leonard Skinner performing Freebird, what has been termed the most requested song in rock history.
Did you not play Rock Band with me?
Yeah, but I could identify songs from, like, the vocals.
Worst. Yeah, it's tricky.
When you excise a guitar solo from a song, I can't play
it. Yo, Runners, yeah. I play Freebird just this, like, when it gets into the solo. And I'm just like, I'm like a nymph. I'm like a wood nymph. Like, I'm running on the trails. Like, I'm free like a bird. Like, it is my jam. So I know that solo.
Awesome.
Like, I don't know who the guitarist is, though.
Yeah, Alan Collins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, very, very deep in the trivia well for that one. Yeah. All right, well, good job, guys. That was cool. Fun to put together.
The 2015 Good Job Brain Awards will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Best of 2015 Good Job Brain Awards. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, co-host Chris.
Thank you. Webster's Dictionary defines segment as one of the parts into which something can be divided. Segments are extremely important parts of anything. The very human body can be divided into many segments, many of which are very important. For example, the top segment or the bottom segment. Some segments, like the appendix or pinky toe, do nothing and should feel bad. But this award for best segment honors a segment that truly embraces the meaning of segment. We have talked occasionally about the great video game Crash of 1983.
Yes.
Now, just prior to that, in 1982, Atari was riding high. They had more money than God. They had wild ambitions, crazy, crazy dreams about what they were going to do with Atari. And from a game design perspective, certainly, and certainly from a marketing blitz perspective, Atari's craziest game was called Sword Quest. Sword Quest.
sounds fantasy related.
Yeah. But Sword Quest was sort of the evolution of games like Adventure, you know, and it was a sort of a, you know, action/puzzle/adventure type game for the Atari 2600, but it was not merely a video game. It was a proposed suite of four video games.
Whoa!
Crazy.
Sword Quest Earthworld, Sword Quest Fireworld, Sword Quest Waterworld, and Sword Quest Airworld. Oh. Each of the Sword Quest games would come packaged with an elaborate comic book produced by DC Comics, which was owned by Warner Communications, which owned Atari. And this told the story, the backstory of the game, the fanciful fantasy backstory of the characters. And beyond that, this was the promise that the Sword Quest game and the Sword Quest comic put together were an elaborate puzzle.
Oh.
And if you can put the clues together correctly, find the correct clues within the game that led you to clues within the comic book and entered your answer, you could get invited to a competition at Atari where you could win one of four prizes, one for each game. Earthworld, the prize was the Talisman of Penultimate Truth.
Oh my God.
Which was a round talisman made of 18 karat gold,
whoa,
in which were inlaid 12 diamonds and one each of the 12 birthstones.
Just what,
of the
what
zodiac.
A really big nerd needs.
Like a talisman?
Massive. It was worth, in 1983, $25,000. Now, again, that's in today's dollars, that's about $60,000, but that's not accounting for the increase in the price of gold. It would be now incredibly worth a lot of money. If you won,
that's just Earth.
Oh, that's just one. If you won the Fire World competition, you would win the Chalice of Light, made of gold and platinum, also inlaid with diamonds and other precious gems. Water World, the Crown of Life, similarly, gold, diamonds, etc. $25,000 in 1983 money. And if you won the Air World competition, you would win the Philosopher's Stone, which was a gigantic hunk of white jade inside an ornate gold jewel-encrusted box.
I can't imagine why this industry bottomed out. It just seems, on the face of it, so sustainable.
It's so logical. Yeah.
Each of these, so now we're at $100,000 in prizes. Finally, of those four winners, they would have a final competition, and one of them would win the Sword of Ultimate Sorcery itself. 18 karat gold handle and a silver blade, also encrusted with jewels, and worth by itself $50,000.
Is that impossible to make?
Yeah. Tari holds the first contest in 1982, and it was so difficult that only 8 people submitted correct answers of all the thousands and thousands of people. And one of them, a guy named Stephen Bell, won the talisman of penultimate truth. The second game, Fire World, they held the contest. The contest was easier. In fact, too many people won, and they had to whittle it down with an essay contest. Why do you love Fire World?
They're just making this up as they go along.
Fire World was the Chalice of Light.
The Chalice.
Essay contest.
I deserve the Chalice of Light.
Yeah. So again, sparing no expense, they fly 50 people to San Francisco. And there was a guy, his name was Michael Rideout, and he won the Chalice.
Okay.
Then everything went to hell. The game industry crashed. Retailers were stuck with unsold copies of Atari games that nobody wanted, including Sword Quest.
It kind of sucks the joy out of it, because you know you can't win the contest.
Well,
the moment the contest is over, you're like, well, I'm not playing this game.
The game was still on, because they had promised these people a shot at the Sword of Ultimate Sorcery. So they can't just stop it. Sword Quest Waterworld was the third game in the series. At this point, retailers didn't want Atari games, but Atari was still selling games to its diehard fans through its mail order, like Atari Club mail order business. So they did, in fact, release Sword Quest Waterworld. They had the Waterworld contest. It was all in the box, and you could send in your entries. They only got as far as picking out the finalists, the people who had sent in correct entries for Waterworld. And at that point, Atari mailed out a letter to all the finalists, basically offering to settle, buy them out, and end the contest. They said that they would pay each of the two guys who had won Earthworld and Fireworld, they said, we will give you $15,000 to walk away. And then to all the people who were going to go and play in the Waterworld competition, a smaller amount of money. And everyone agreed to cash out. And not go for it. Figuring,
smart.
You know, 15,000 versus getting the sword, you know, or versus a 1 in 4 shot at the sword. You might as well take the 15,000 bucks. So there was no final round. The prize was never awarded, and Sword Quest Air World was never made. So, where is everything now? As recently as 2005, people tracked down Michael Rideout, and he was still in the possession of the Chalice of Light. He still had a safe deposit box.
Okay.
Enlightenment, I don't think, has come to him. Nobody has been able to track down Stephen Bell, but apparently he actually had the Talisman of Penultimate Truth melted down and sold it for the scrap value of the gold, which is probably a lot of money at the time. And as for the Crown of Life and the Philosopher's Stone and the Sword of Ultimate whatever.
Sorcery, Chris.
Whereabouts unknown.
Oh.
Whoa.
So they made them. The contestants saw them. The rumor is that the Tramiel family, the founders of Commodore who bought Atari out, the rumor has always been that they have had them in their possession, but that's never been proven, and they've never been seen again.
They're on the wall in someone's basement, someone's game room.
They're not even on the wall. Yeah. They're in a box. All right. So I'm going to talk about black, which is a funny thing to talk about in a show about light, because black is often known as the absence of color.
The opposite.
The opposite. It also, in physics, is the complete absorption of light.
Mm. Indeed.
There is a new material. It was discovered in 2008. It's called Vanta Black.
Oh.
Vanta?
Vanta.
V-A-N-T-A.
Stands for Vertically Aligned Nanotube Array.
Yes.
Oh, it's an acronym.
Yes.
It's carbon nanotubes?
Acronym or abbreviation?
Acronym.
Yes.
Vanta
Black.
Fanta.
No.
Right.
And it absorbs almost all light. It is the closest thing we have to actual black.
Wow.
And it's new. And it's new because it couldn't have existed before.
Oh.
They basically have to grow it in a laboratory. It's made of carbon nanotubes. They grow it on aluminum foil. And they grow these tiny little tubes.
You actually grow?
You grow it. Yes, and it's super densely packed. There's no space between them. They're nanotubes, so they're that's 1/1,000,000th of a millimeter. That's how small they are. They're tiny. When you wrinkle a piece of paper, you can see all the shades and the shadows and the reflection of the
little
light.
Facets and...
You wrinkle this, or you try to crumple this up.
You can't
there
see
are
it.
No. Wow. Wrinkles. You
oh
can't
my,
see
I
it.
I can't even think about this.
Yeah, it's like, it blows your mind. There are videos of it. I highly recommend watching some videos. It makes...
It just looks the same whether it's flat or wrinkled.
But is it like a sheet of paper? Like what is it?
It kind of looks like it would be spongy a little bit. It's a little bit thick because they're...
Wow.
So they use them for military and NASA.
Of course.
So it's great for masking things because it absorbs all light. You can't see it. It's like the closest thing we have to maybe being invisible from somewhere else. But you can totally see. They put it in NASA telescopes because it absorbs all the light. And it removes all the distortion from the light going into the telescope. So you can get the crystal clear pictures.
So you get only the light you
want.
It's
like 10 times clearer than anything they've had before.
Wow.
Guys, this is weird.
It's like looking into a black hole, some people say.
It's like, I feel like everything's being censored. You know, there's like a black bar on everything.
If you look at an image of it, it looks like somebody went into Photoshop
and
cut out that whole part of the image.
Right.
And then just hit delete.
Yeah, because there's no light.
Because it doesn't reflect anything back to the camera.
So if you made like a little black dress out of this, you would look like a 2D character because there are no shades.
There's no contour, no highlights. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What do you mean grow? Like, is it
they build them up. They build them up.
Just imagine a hot glue gun, except for it spits out individual carbon molecules.
Vanta Black.
Vanta Black.
Wait, what does Vanta stand for again?
Vertically aligned nanotube array. So they're all little tubes standing up.
Oh, they're standing up, not lying down. Okay, yeah. I was thinking they're lying down like pickup sticks. No, this is like
little forests, like little trees.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they absorb 99.96% of all light, the darkest material we've made so far.
Oh my God, that's weird.
We're getting so close.
We're getting so close. Come on, people, we can do this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, early on, it's like, well, we got these mirrors down pretty good. We're going to be reflecting all the light. How hard could it be to go the other direction?
Right.
Really hard.
Really hard. Wow. Yeah.
We talked about honey on the show before.
Yeah.
I think we had
lots of cool honey facts.
A great slam dunk with our segment about bees eating M&Ms and then producing blue honey and all kinds of stuff. So it got me thinking, going out and getting honey out of beehives must be a very old human activity, right?
Yeah.
Like this must go back a long way.
Yeah, yeah.
It turns out that in fact, there's a cave painting that very clearly depicts someone climbing up a tree and reaching their hand into a nest to get honey. This cave painting could be, because of course it's very difficult to date these things, could be up to 8,000 years old. So honey hunting, here's the part where it just gets crazy. There is a family of birds, and they have the family name Indicatoridae.
Which what?
Their common name of these birds is the honey guide.
It indicates where the honey is.
Right. One word. The honey guy. Indicatoridae. Yes. Chief among these birds, this family of birds, is the greater honey guy, who has the amazing Latin name of Indicator Indicator. That's his Latin name. Honey guy birds are one of the few birds out there that eat wax.
Honey.
They don't want the honey. They don't want honey at all. They're interested in eating like wax or like wax worms or like, I mean, they eat insects and stuff like that.
So like the walls nutrients. Of the honeycomb as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. And there's a lot, beeswax, beeswax. The bees are careful to not let the honey guide birds into their nest because it is
made of
none of their beeswax.
Okay. I was waiting. Waiting for it.
Thank you. Yeah. So anyway, the honey guides cannot actually get in there. They will get like probably stung to death trying to go in. So the honey guide birds over the millennia developed a fantastic, fascinating evolutionary behavior. They will go and they will find a human being and they will be like, hey, in a certain manner, like, follow me. And
look at me, look at me.
They will fly conspicuously or like, you know, make themselves very conspicuous as they go from like tree to tree or flying to get the human to follow them. And the humans learn, oh, these birds will lead us to honey.
They train the humans to birds.
That's great.
And they will do certain calls and things like that to try to get their attention. This is still practiced today by societies like the Hadza, which are people who live in Tanzania. Mm-hmm. And they follow after the birds, and the birds lead them to the hive. Then once they get to the hive, the humans smoke out the bees.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you smoke to dull the bees will not like, they'll still sting you, like some of them will, but
they
mostly
don't like it.
They'll be lulled into a torpor, you know. They will not but they reach in and they pull out the honeycomb, and that's something the honey guide, you know, could not do. And so now the honey guide can potentially go in and get the scraps that the humans leave over, but the humans get the honey, the bees, the birds get what they want.
It's like his finder's fee.
Yes. Today the Hadza will often eat all the honeycomb, and then take whatever they did not eat, and they actually burn it. And there's a video of somebody asking, so why are you doing this? He goes, well, I mean, if the bird were to eat it, the bird would get full and then wouldn't guide me to any more nests. We're stringing the honey guide along to keep him hungry, so he'll lead me to more honey.
This is like being mischievous on both sides.
Yeah. There is manipulation on both sides of this relationship. And to make you feel a little bit better about this, I want to stress that the honey guide, so we know what the honey guide, you know, how he interacts with humans. Yeah. Sounds like a cool guy. No.
Yeah.
The honey guide
is an a-hole?
He is.
Yeah, I bet.
The honey guide is an a-hole bird. Now, careful listeners of Good Job Brain know about a-hole birds.
Yes.
Like the cuckoo. I mean, you discussed on an earlier show, the cuckoo is what is called a brood parasite.
Mm. Yeah.
And that what that means is that the cuckoo does not raise its own eggs. The cuckoo goes around to other birds' nests and deposits the eggs in the other nests. The honey guide also does this.
Oh,
the honey
my
guide
God.
Is also a brood parasite.
It's a crafty bird.
So the honey guide does not take care of its own children. It doesn't even build its own nest. It goes and finds a nest full of eggs from another bird and deposits its own babies in there and then beats it. And then the other birds are tricked into thinking that the honey guide is one of their children.
Right.
Yeah.
The honey guide is the primo a-hole of all a-hole birds. Because the first thing a honey guide bird usually does when it hits up somebody else's nest is it checks to see if there's any other honey guide eggs in the nest. So if another honey guide has already been there the same thing, no, it punctures the egg with its beak.
Oh my God.
It pops a hole in it to kill it.
Yeah.
Then if there's other eggs from the actual birds that built that nest, it will also puncture them too. But it knows the honey guide eggs, gets those first. Because it needs to kill off any potential other honey guides who will compete with it for the nests that it's going after. So it kills its own.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. Oh, it gets worse.
Oh.
So let's say, for example, that this attack did not work or didn't puncture all the eggs and the other chicks are born. Well, the honey guide egg that's been left in this nest usually is born first. Birds are born blind, naked, and basically helpless.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, totally vulnerable. If you've ever seen a baby chick that's just been born, it is gross. A little alien, and it's blind, it can't do anything, it can't fly. honey guides, when they are born with a tiny working razor sharp needle beak. And they sit there and wait. And as their little foster
siblings
are born, as soon as they hatch out of the egg, the baby honey, the blind, flightless baby honey guide goes over and brutally murders them. He grabs them, he bites them to death, he'll shake them around in his jaws until they're dead. One by one, kills all the other babies. So the parents come back, all the babies are dead except for their fake baby,
yeah,
killed them all.
He's like, I don't know what happened. Yeah.
Well, they were like that when I got here. Also, apparently the honey guides are generally bigger,
yep,
or certainly like want more food. Yeah, they want more food than the babies that are in there anyway. So now these poor parents are like working overtime to feed this not their baby because it gets
giant,
huge,
yeah,
right, for like a month. Until he finally leaves the nest.
At least he doesn't murder them, too.
You know what? He does not murder them.
That's a silver lining.
Yep. But just day one, stone cold killer right out of the egg.
Yeah.
Just killing
all the babies. It's like a Shakespeare tragedy.
Honey guy.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Chris, please keep us informed. You are officially on the honey and bee beat.
Yeah.
For good job, Rain.
If anything else pops up,
it's
I'll
official.
Let you know.
You're the head of the office there. Awesome.
The 2015 Good Job, Rain Awards will be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
A lot of people call themselves foodies, say they're really into food. Now, I don't want to boast or anything, but I eat food pretty much every day. So I am honored to introduce to you the winners for greatest food-related Good Job Brain segments. The competition was fierce this year, but ultimately, this lucky group made it to the top of the food chain. But no, like, I was thinking, okay, this will be an easy one. Alice in Wonderland, it's full of food, it's full of fantasy. I can find some fantasy food to talk about. And I always loved Alice in Wonderland as a kid, too. I'm just
imaginative.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and one of those things that, like, you appreciate a lot more as an adult. You're like, oh, I didn't get this reference at all as a kid.
Really?
I think a lot of the stuff. I mean, he's got, you know, random math jokes and things tucked in. You know, Lewis Carroll was he was a strange guy, to say. But as it turns out, I fell down a different rabbit hole, if you will, yes, with a slightly
different
twist.
Yeah.
That's easy.
I hate you. I want to talk about a fantasy animal connected to a real food, connected to an imitation food.
I know what it is.
I bet you guys probably do.
Chris
is catching up.
Okay.
During Alice's adventures in the book.
Wait, can we write down our answers?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. Wow. This is
And then we'll.
All right.
We're talking about
this is an impromptu quiz. This is a animal that we encounter during Alice's adventures. Yes, one of the characters. Answers up. The mock turtle. Yes, I'm talking about the mock turtle. Now,
can I tell you one quick thing
please?
That was so weird? I was Googling for some quiz, And it was, I was like, how many meats? I was going to ask how many meats were on something. And it was like, how many meats are on a turtle? It was like a list of questions about how many meats. That's what Google thought I was going to ask. And I don't know why.
You're like, I thought you're like, okay.
Who's been searching this?
I was like,
this?
I've never asked you anything like this, Google. Right. Why do you think I care about how many meats are on a turtle's body? Anyway, there you go.
How many meats are in a turtle body?
I almost followed it, and then I was like, I don't want to give Google the wrong idea. Yeah.
Oh my god, it's the number one thing.
For what? How
many meats? In autocomplete. How many meats in a turtle?
Well, let's we'll get here. We'll get there. We'll get there. I may be able to give you some idea. In case you don't remember, yes, in the book, shortly after playing some croquet, Alice and the Queen are walking off, and the Queen says, and I'm quoting here from the book, "Then the Queen left off quite out of breath and said to Alice, 'Have you seen the Mock Turtle yet?' 'No,' said Alice, 'I don't even know what a mock turtle is.' 'It's the thing mock turtle soup is made from,' said the Queen." And, you know, like, as a kid, that was a sufficiently silly, absurd answer.
Yeah. Duh.
And, you know, as I got older, I think I did sort of learn. I knew vaguely that mock turtle soup was a real thing. In the same way that, like, you know, like mock apple pie.
Or, right.
Right, or other mock dishes.
What's mock apple pie?
Saltines.
Or Ritz crackers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cracker pie.
It's the crust.
With
it's
pectin.
Different.
No.
What?
The cracker is the apple meat.
Get out of here.
Yes, mock apple pie.
Is with crackers. Saltines and like sugar.
It's after it drenches, it has a texture that's similar to like the baked apples in apple pie.
Yeah.
Yep.
It is a flavor fooler. Yeah. Huh.
Flavor foolery.
Mock turtle soup was a thing, which you could probably
have
piece together
turtle
that
soup.
Turtle soup was a thing.
Right.
So turtle soup wasn't just a thing. Turtle soup was hugely, hugely popular in its day.
What?
Yes. And I mean, as early as the 1700s, even like in colonial times in America, turtle soup was a big thing. It was a big thing in England. It was a big thing because it was a delicacy. It started as sort of an upper crust kind of dish and sort of trickled down to the masses, got more and more and more popular. Now, and there's two things to keep in mind. Making turtle soup sounds like it was a pain in the butt. Because just imagine cleaning a turtle, you know what I mean? Like dressing, like you gotta get through the shell, you gotta clean it up, cut it up. I learned apparently that there were many types of meats on a turtle.
Huh.
Wow!
Many types of meats to make turtle of. And as it got more and more popular, people are like, you know what? We can find a substitute here for mock turtle soup. A little bit cheaper, a little bit easier to make. Mock turtle soup commonly would be made with like sweetbreads or random parts of a calf. Okay. You know, anything from the brains to cow's feet, you know, it was kind of a... Yes, it was sort of a catch-all. Turtle soup, incredibly popular. It was said to be President William Taft's favorite food.
Whoa.
His favorite food, turtle soup. This was a case where the imitation, kind of like maple syrup, the way that a lot of people prefer the imitation maple syrup, a lot of people started to get, they loved mock turtle soup. And you would go into a diner and it would say proudly on the menu, "Hey, mock turtle soup." By the 1920s, Campbell's soup had a mock turtle soup.
Yes.
This was how popular it was. You don't need to look it up, Karen, because I'm going to show you an ad. This is an ad. And I have to say, I like the direction they're going here. This is from 1928. Mock turtle soup. You'll like its unusual flavor.
Holy cow.
It's a little kid.
It's a little kid. It's the little Campbell's kid riding a turtle. Yeah.
Wow.
Before she kills it.
Campbell's mock turtle soup.
Mock.
Okay.
Yeah. So
man, how quickly it fell out of favor from going from like one of the Campbell's soup flavors to you suggest I eat what?
Yes. Yeah. Heinz mock turtle soup. If you were in the business of making soups, you would have a mock turtle soup flavor.
Did it go away, do you know?
It faded pretty rapidly, I have to say, over the next few decades. Yeah. There are some recipes you'll find today that just use straight beef, even. It looks kind of like a beef stew. Alice goes and she meets the griffin and the mock turtle in short succession.
Oh,
and she's supposed to go hear the mock turtle's sad story.
Oh, right.
And, you know, the sad story of the mock turtle, as it turns out, is that he used to be a real turtle, and now he's a mock turtle.
Oh.
And
that's really clever.
It is clever. Yeah, it is. I have here a picture. This is
These are the very famous
illustrations by John Tenniel. Yep.
Oh my god, this makes so much sense
the
now.
Very famous.
He's a calf.
It makes so much sense. If you look at the picture of the mock turtle, he's got a turtle shell and a turtle body and turtle flippers, but he's got the head of a calf, the feet and the tail of a cow and a calf.
Yep.
And so this is, again, the very sort of cheeky idea that
there is an animal.
You're ordering a mock turtle soup, and this is why you're getting cow parts, because this is the animal that mock turtle soup is made out of.
Wow, that's wow. Whoosh! Over my head as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. Please, dude. This was all over my head as a kid. This is way too much subtext. Yeah.
I know. Wow.
And to be honest, like conservation efforts among turtle populations have really like it's not just is it hard and cumbersome, but it's really destructive to the turtle ecosystem. There are a lot of laws that you would have to break in parts of the world to make every kind of turtle soup. You can still get it. You can still find turtle soup in many places around the globe. But there is no mock turtle actually giving up its life to make mock turtle soup.
That's pretty funny,
it's though. A cow. Yeah. I had no idea that it was that popular.
Just envisioned it in my mind as being like green.
Green.
Shells
I would imagine it being served in a shell. Kid imagination.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm just imagining the Shredder telling the Ninja Turtles that he's going to make them into turtle soup, you know?
Right.
And then it's mock turtle soup.
But then it turns out it's mock turtle soup.
They all laugh and eat pizza.
Right.
There's the episode.
Wow.
That's the episode.
Done. Yeah.
So Chris got us all highfalutin with epic poetry, and now I'm gonna bring it back down to something a little earthier, but also epic. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna talk about epic eating contests.
Yes.
Nice.
This is the world of competitive eating, where people eat more food than a human body should without training. So I'll start off with a question or two.
Mm-hmm.
What food do competitors eat every year on July 4th in Coney Island, New York?
Hot dogs.
Nathan's hot dogs.
That is right. Nathan's hot dogs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The Nathan's hot dog eating contest started in 1972.
Oh.
And until the 2000s, people would eat like 10, 14,
Cause they,
20, 25.
Because they just go and they just eat hot dogs.
They're like, I can eat a lot of hot dogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And those people could eat a lot of hot dogs just as a normal person.
Right.
And then...
like, they're the kind of people who would go to Nathan's and order like 10 hot dogs because they just had a man-sized hunger.
I have a big hunger. Yeah. I'm a big man. They were all men. They were all men at that point.
Of course.
So in 2000, the new record was 25 and a half hot dogs.
But still.
But then the very next year, 2001, the record was 25 and a half. It was smashed. It was 50.
Yeah.
Somebody came and ate 50
hot
dogs.
That's just a game changer. Yeah. I mean, that's just like rewriting the hot dog rules.
The conversation has advanced now in terms of like how people can epically eat. In 1 year. Mm-hmm. And so do you guys know the name of the guy who came in and...
Kobayashi.
He showed that this could be a very competitive sport and that people were doing it wrong, basically. The Kobayashi method of eating hot dogs.
Okay.
Do you guys know, can you guess what the Kobayashi
method is? Wasn't it that he would do two at a time, basically? I mean, I know he separated the buns and the meat.
One of the big important things is he would take the bread and dip it in water, and then it would just make the bread just sort of slide down real fast, and you can get
it's
a
like
lot
a
more
bread
in.
Slushy, yeah.
You could,
it helps with the surface area because bread is big, and then you can squish it down.
Yep.
You also don't have any time to drink water, so this is a way to get a little bit of water in there.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And then I think somebody mentioned it. Hot dog HDB is a thing that comes up in competitive eating. It stands for hot dog and bun. And so your hot dogs don't count unless you also eat the bun.
Yes.
So you have to be very careful about it. So, but back to the question about the Kobayashi method. That is breaking the hot dog in two and putting it in both sides of your mouth.
Folding it in half.
So both of your cheeks, there's something.
So you're
there.
Working.
Yeah. You're going
all
for
of
it.
The volume.
I thought he was eating two at a time because I've seen the video of him stuffing like in house, but I guess.
It.
Oh, okay.
That's so smart.
Yep. What that represents is this mental break away from, like, how do we usually eat food?
Yeah.
Like, that's the hurdle that he went over, which is, like, I'm going to eat, like
an
I
animal.
Have to break
I'm
myself away from, yeah. like, how we usually eat a hot dog.
Yeah. So what's picnic-style rules? Picnic-style rules.
I'm guessing that means that, like, you cannot do all that stuff.
Yeah. You cannot yeah. separate.
You have to yeah. eat it as you would normally yeah. eat a hot dog.
Yes. And, people are like, oh, it's less... gross to watch that way, and it's
That's
better for
agreed.
Concert.
Agreed.
Like if you sponsored the like event, your yep. food isn't being like deconstructed,
right? And,
like,
and your buns aren't being soaked right. in water and looking oh. like gross bun slop. Yeah, sure, yeah. sure.
What about chipmunking?
Oh,
must be storing food in your cheeks.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
You stuff food in your cheeks, and so like right when they call time, these are usually timed. They're like 10 to 12 minutes.
So right when they call time, you can try to swallow as much of it as you can.
You get 30 seconds after they call time to get it down. So, so it behooves you to have as much of it in your,
mouth as
possible.
You possibly can.
What's a Roman incident?
I'm gonna guess that's when an unexpected loss of hot dogs.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
So if you you're eating a lot of stuff, you're chewing a lot of stuff. If any of it gets on the table or on a plate, you're disqualified. That's the end.
Oh, okay.
So
wait, the vomit?
Yeah.
Okay, but if crumbs are on the plate,
yeah.
You just have to
but if it's like, oh no, you threw up on the table. No, you're done. You have to. You're out.
Oh yeah.
So you have to seems down. Fair. Seems fair.
Yeah. Roman incident.
It's a Roman incident, and that happens to people.
Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So what's the record number of hot dogs eaten in a contest? So 2001 was when the 50 was set. What have they gotten it up to now?
I feel like they got it into the low to mid 60s.
I'd say 62.
78.
It is 69.
Wow.
Wow, I almost made that joke.
Wow.
It's not a joke.
It's real.
It's reality, Karen.
2013, Joey Chestnut from...
Oh, Joey Chestnut!
San Jose, California.
Yeah. Oh, so was he the current... Record holder?
No.
Record holder.
Oh, well, record holder, but he just lost Nathan's,
yes,
right?
He lost, right. but he is the record holder.
Wow.
For Nathan's.
For Nathan's.
Yeah,
So I'm proud to announce that next month I'm doing something called the Beer Mile.
What?
And I am doing so much research about it. So it's 1 mile. It's hopefully at a track. And then you chug a can of beer in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then you run a lap. You chug another one.
Oh, no.
You do that 4 times.
Oh, yeah. And what fraternity are you joining?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, oh, okay, she's pledging.
And it's the rules, the official rules are like, you know, they really cover all the loopholes. Can of beer, standard can of beer, has to be 5% alcohol or more.
Okay.
Okay.
So it can't be Bud Light.
Right.
It can't be like something very light. If you do have a Roman incident, you have to do another lap, and that counts as your...
a penalty lap. Okay.
A penalty lap.
Okay.
And so I've been practicing. Like, I'm
You've
serious
been practicing.
About it. I've been practicing with carbonated water and soda, and sometimes with Bud Light.
Okay.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It is really hard.
Are you just
hard.
Running around your neighborhood all a little buzzed?
Yeah,
yeah.
Not, okay. not a little buzz. But see, it's not the alcohol that's the problem. The alcohol is a problem after you do the race.
Yeah. yeah.
But during the race, it's the bloating. It's it's the carbonation that's really, really hard to.
It must be a loud race. Let me put it that way. Yeah.
You have to force yourself to burp to make room in your stomach, and also like I think the person I think currently who holds the record got it down to 4:57.
Wow.
Whoa.
A mile with stopping to drink.
Yes. And it takes him 8 seconds to chug.
Wow.
It's taking me 25 seconds average, and I think I'm doing pretty
That's
good.
That's fast.
I know.
That is you know what? Competitive eaters can drink a gallon of water in 30 seconds.
Holy
my God.
Crap. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll come help, you know, train. You know, I'll do the chug part, and
and then you'll just watch her around, and then you'll chug again.
All good things must come to an end. As we congratulate the winners, we must bid adieu to 2015. But in the horizon comes 2016. I wish you, dear audience, a happy new year and good night. And drive safely. Tip your servers.
Traffic.
traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.